It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Nigeria's government condemns weekend violence that kills more than 50 people. Another bombing strikes the Somali capital, Mogadishu. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The Nigerian government Monday condemned the weekend violence in the northern part of the country. Suspected Islamist militants killed more than 50 people in several villages Sunday. Michael Mary is Director General of the National Orientation Agency.
Government acknowledges the attack in Kautikeri, Kwada, and Rijuzu local communities about 10 kilometers from Chibok in Borno State. From reports so far, we understand that there are casualties, including amongst the attackers who were shot by the military while attempting to flee the area. At present, government is working closely with local sources and community leaders to ascertain the extent of damage and accurate figures as a result thereof.
Villagers complain the military's response to the attacks was slow. The attacks occurred in the same area where in April members of Boko Haram kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls. U.S. spokesperson Jen Psaki in Washington Monday said the search for those girls is international in scope and continues.
We have a team that's been on the ground for several weeks now. We'll continue to evaluate additional resources, what additional resources we can provide. I wish I did have an update on it, but unfortunately there's not one at this point to provide.
According to the French press agency, the Nigerian military has broken up a Boko Haram intelligence cell and arrested its leader, alleged to have taken part in those mass abductions in April. A defense headquarters statement says businessman Abauji Yaari, who also served as a member of a civilian youth group with ties to the military, allegedly used his position as a cover to work for the militants. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Monday the horrific attacks perpetrated by Boko Haram are becoming, quote, an almost daily occurrence in northeast Nigeria. Mr. Ban condemned the continuing violence and conveyed his solidarity and sympathy to the people of Nigeria. In Somalia Monday, at least two people killed, several wounded when a bomb ripped through a busy marketplace in Mogadishu. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but past such attacks have been claimed by the Islamist group Al-Shabaab. Gunmen killed three people Sunday, and Al-Shabaab vowed to wage a series of attacks during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Meanwhile, China Monday said it will reopen its embassy 23 years after evacuating its personnel amid civil war. A Chinese delegation is to be sent today. Libyans Monday headed to marketplaces across the country, stocking up on supplies during the holy month of Ramadan. Shoppers such as Irhim Abdel Salam have noticed a spike in prices. In general, he says, prices have begun to rise during the holy month of Ramadan. We notice prices have almost doubled in some cases, and we don't know why. Libyans continue struggling with security 3 years after the ouster of longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi, the country's troubled transition to democracy. UN envoy Hilda Johnson says international pressure is crucial in pressuring two warring factions in South Sudan to end their fighting. She called the situation bleak, warning that time is running short as an agreement on a transitional government deadline has been set for August 10th approaches. Ms. Johnson says while fighting has subsided, it needs to stop altogether. Thousands have been killed, more than a million displaced by the fighting, which broke out in December. The UN envoy says progress at the negotiating table is imperative because of the threat of famine. The fighting has left farmers unable to plant crops. Zimbabwe's central bank is considering establishing a way for foreign investors to have a stake in recapitalizing bad bank loans as several banks struggle to keep from declaring default. The country faces total outstanding loans of $3.6 billion as of the first quarter, with 17% classified as non-performing. France and Germany have advanced to the World Cup football quarterfinals in Brazil, Algeria putting up a valiant effort but losing to Germany 2-1. Earlier Monday, France shut out Nigeria with two late goals, 2-0. The last two second-round matches are to be played today. Argentina goes against Switzerland. The U.S. team will take on Belgium. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The world condemns Boko Haram's latest deadly attack as diaspora Nigerians demand action from their government.
I am still a citizen of Nigeria. I want to be proud of Nigeria.
Exactly.
I want Nigeria to claim that mantle giant of Africa.
Yes.
The only way it's going to do that is if it secures its people.
That was Moju Balu Olufunke Okome speaking at a demonstration in New York City against Boko Haram violence. The World Food Program sees dramatic improvement in Zimbabwe's food situation compared to last year. A high-ranking South Sudan politician joins the rebels, and Uganda's opposition demands troop withdrawal from South Sudan and Somalia.
In the case of South Sudan, we did deploy the troops under the constitutional provision, which required that the president could inform parliament and seek their support in terms of ensuring that the nation succeeds.
Simon Mulongo is a member of Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs and will examine penalty kicks through the eyes of scientists. Those stories plus Mark Omar Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian government has condemned the weekend violence in the northern part of the country. Suspected Islamic militants attacked several villages on Sunday near Chibok in Borno State, killing more than 50 people. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Monday condemned the continuing violence and conveyed his solidarity and sympathy to the people of Nigeria. In Washington, D.C., State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki Monday voiced U.S. condemnation of the attacks.
There are similarities. It fits the Boko Haram's recent pattern in terms of target attacks and methods of attack. I don't think they have come out and claimed responsibility, but regardless of that, we condemn the reported attacks on four villages near Chibok. Our sympathies go out to the victims and their families. We remain committed to helping the government of Nigeria address the threat posed by the criminal terrorist group. Our embassy continues to support Nigerian efforts to bring about the safe recovery of the abductees.
Psaki also said the U.S. has been concerned about the rising threat of Boko Haram and has increased its assistance to the Nigerian government.
We maintain a significant level of military cooperation that includes increasing counterterrorism capabilities to counter IEDs and enhance its civilian military operations. We're providing additional equipment for Nigeria's Intelligence Fusion Center. We're also providing military training and other assistance to help professionalize the Nigerian military and increase its maritime security and peacekeeping capabilities. We also work with the Special Boat Service and other Leahy-cleared conventional and special operations unit. We're providing law enforcement assistance, including by training Nigerian law enforcement officials on CT investigations, basic forensics, border security, counter-IED, and post-blast investigations and crisis management. We also support programs and initiatives to combat violent extremist ideology, including job training and education. And we're working with civil society, non-governmental organizations, and various levels of government to provide humanitarian and development assistance.
That was State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki speaking Monday during the regular daily press briefings. The April kidnapping in northern Nigeria of hundreds of girls by the terrorist group Boko Haram is still an everyday cause for rage, concern, and increasingly grief. Viewers Adam Phillips attended a street demonstration held regularly by Nigerians living in New York City in front of the Nigerian consulate.
The 100 or so demonstrators representing the Bring Back Our Girls U.S. Coalition were in New York on Friday trying to keep the fate of over 200 women on people's minds. Moju Balu Olufunke Okome was one of the leaders who spoke.
Nigerian government, this is a disgrace. I am calling on the Nigerian government.
Yes.
I am still a citizen of Nigeria. I yes. want to be proud of Nigeria.
Exactly.
I want yes. Nigeria to claim that mantle giant of Africa.
Yes.
The only way it's going to do that is if it secures its people.
Yes.
The only way it's going to do that is if it educates all its children.
Exactly.
The only yes. way it's going to do that in good faith
yes.
is if any child in Nigeria is as valued as the child of our president.
Yes. Yes. Right.
But Okome also wanted everyday passers-by to take heed.
Think about it. If this is your relative, if this is your sister, or this is your daughter, or this is your friend, or this is somebody that comes to your church, or this is somebody that comes to your mosque, how would you feel? The same way you feel if this is somebody that you know personally is how you should feel if any of God's children is in a situation like this girl's. It breaks my heart.
Ronka Olawale, a Nigerian-American, attended a school much like those the abducted girls were attending. She wants them to have the same opportunities she was given.
Girls deserve education. Girls deserve to go to school. Girls have rights. They are children. They are being denied their childhood. They are being abused. They are being molested. They are being forced to take up a religion that they ordinarily would not take. I think it's an infringement on their rights. It's an abuse on their personhood. It's a demeaning of their personality. I feel traumatized for these girls because I can only imagine what they're going through.
Ronka's own daughter, 12-year-old Daniela, nodded sadly at her mother's words. Those girls are crying, she said. They want their families back. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
South Sudan rebels say a high-ranking member of the South Sudan leadership is joining the opposition. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, where months of peace talks have failed to produce an end to the conflict.
One high-ranking member of the South Sudan ruling party, SPLM, announced Monday to join the rebels who have been fighting against the ruling party and President Salva Kiir since December. The defector, Ezekiel Lo Gatkuot, is one of the 11 former political detainees. He is also the former ambassador for South Sudan to the United States and the United Nations. He says he has decided to join the opposition under the leadership of former Vice President Riek Machar to realize a new South Sudan.
The new beginning is a new South Sudan where I would want to see the war to stop and have a South Sudan free from ethnic politics and embrace all the critical reforms, including institutionalization of a federal system. This South Sudan will only come if a new leadership emerges.
A group of 11 SPLM leaders were arrested after fighting broke out mid-December. They were accused by President Kiir of plotting a coup and were only released after international pressure. Seven of the 11 political leaders were released in February. These seven stated that they would not join either side and wanted to join the peace talks as a third party in order to be neutral. The last four detainees were only released in May. Gatkuot is the only one to join the opposition, but believes the 11 political leaders were never really neutral as they had raised issues of corruption, nepotism and other matters to President Kiir before the war broke out. He says that all former detainees are championing reforms.
My colleagues who are still in that category of former detainees, we are one and we will continue to be one. And we will work together to bring changes in our country, changes that we have been calling for, reforms, critical reforms.
Peace talks between the warring parties have made little progress so far. Three agreements were signed, including a ceasefire that has been repeatedly violated by both sides. The two sides were given 60 days in June to set up a transitional government of unity. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A member of Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs has rejected opposition demands that the government should present a timetable to withdraw all Ugandan troops from both Somalia and South Sudan. Simon Molongo tells reporter Peter Clotty the government has a constitutional responsibility to protect Uganda's interests and security.
The opposition have surprised us by coming up with the demand that we withdraw our forces from South Sudan and also for the peacekeeping mission in Somalia. Now, The two situations are similar but not the same, and both of them have been justified adequately by the government. In the case of South Sudan, we did deploy the troops under the constitutional provisions, which required that the president could inform parliament and seek their support in terms of ensuring that the nation succeeds. And the reasons given to us by government were mainly that they wanted to forestall genocide. Secondly, to ensure that the government in Juba does not fall and such that the government is engulfed in a necessary civil war. And three, that they could provide a condition that would be conducive for negotiations.
They are saying that the UPDF being a permanent substitute for a Somali national army and that Uganda's forces are being killed in a senseless war in South Sudan. He specifically stated that Uganda or the UPDF has literally taken sides in the conflict, which has become an issue in the ongoing talks between the opposition and the government of South Sudan.
You know, the approach to the argument by the opposition is, first of all, fundamentally wrong. We are talking about an invitation by a state to another state. The government in Juba still stands and sends the invitation to the government in Kampala. If we were standing by the rebels, then the argument would make sense. But we're talking about bilateral arrangement. And if there is any negotiation, the government through IGAD supports negotiation, peaceful settlement, if only they can agree in the ongoing negotiations in Addis Ababa. So to me, the argument raised the opposition to equate the rebel groups to the state, That's not correct as well.
But they are saying that the Ugandans are not in favor of a unilateral action by taking the troops to both Somalia and South Sudan without seeking approval from parliament that the constitution demands.
The constitution has two provisions. The provision where the government can deploy the troops outside the country and inform parliament. And then there is also a provision in which they seek ratification of parliament. Now, the government took the former, and indeed were informed. We had an ensued debate in the House, and the motion was carried in which we consented to support the president's action as commander-in-chief to deploy the troops in South Sudan.
Sam Mulongo is a member of Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. The Zimbabwe country director for the World Food Program says the country has made a dramatic improvement in food security compared to last year when 2.2 million people were facing hunger. A detailed report on the food situation by the government and WFP is expected to be released sometime this week. Country Director Sori Wani said the biggest challenge now is funding.
The food security situation in Zimbabwe, I must say, has improved. I would even say has dramatically improved since last year compared to the situation a year ago, because as you rightly mentioned, I arrived in the country a year ago, and the beginning in Zimbabwe was rather hectic with a very bad food security situation.
What programs is WFP carrying out now?
Basically, what we want is to get away from free food distribution to people, to food insecure people, because we are of the view that this is not going to help them, you know, to sort of bounce back from poverty and food insecurity. Instead, we want to place more emphasis on resilience building and asset creation. We want people to come together to work on the creation of productive assets that can be less vulnerable to future shocks. So the second pillar, important pillar of our program is on nutrition. We have some people who are malnourished and also those affected by HIV and tuberculosis receiving food assistance to improve their nutritional status. So these two pillars, asset creation and nutrition interventions, are the strategic shift WFP wants to make in the country.
What is the biggest challenge you are currently facing?
Well, the biggest challenge is funding. Funding is very important, and I usually tell my colleagues that we have a vision in Zimbabwe, a good vision to assist the people, you know, and lift them out of poverty. But if we don't have funding, you know, to translate this vision into reality, it becomes a hallucination. So funding is the biggest challenge that we have in the country.
Sorry, Uwane is the Zimbabwe Country Director for the World Food Programme. He was speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri of VOA's Zimbabwe Programme. Deadlocked football matches often end in penalty kicks, most recently in Sunday's World Cup match between Costa Rica and Greece. A British scientist says football teams should be very serious about looking at the science of penalty kicks. VOA's George Putish has more.
In the 1994 World Cup, the missed penalty kick by Roberto Baggio dashed the hopes of the Italian team in the final match against Brazil. Team psychologists and strategists have long studied the emotions of both the kicker and the goalie, trying to find strong and weak points. Ken Bray, a sports scientist at the University of Bath, says to be successful, the kicker must aim for the area outside the goalkeeper's maximum reach.
If you can place the ball outside of his diving envelope, you should be successful almost 100% of the time.
Studies have shown that shots inside the envelope were saved 50% of the time, which is the same as flipping a coin. But shots aimed at the so-called unsavable zone were more than 80% successful. Bray, who wrote the book How to Score, also says anxiety issues dictate that the team's coach should not let his best shooter make the first kick.
Less experience first, more experience last, produces better results on average.
Players agree, adding that it is also important not to change your mind when running up to kick the ball.
Technique on the day was to place the ball on my right foot and go to my right.
Goalkeepers also try to distract the kickers.
When the player's walking up, I'll have the ball in my hands before, so then they'll have to come to get it off me. So then as they're walking back, I'll step out a little bit, step out, so then ref has to tell me to step on my line, just get into the players' heads.
Ken Bray says coaches should not choose penalty kickers on a volunteer basis, but rather carefully analyze which of their players is best suited for the nerve-wracking task. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. It was the end of the road for Africa's campaign at the World Cup on Tuesday after Nigeria's Super Eagles and Algeria's Desert Fox were eliminated in the showdown for places in the quarterfinals. First up were the African champions Nigeria's Super Eagles, who played France in the capital, Brasilia. The Super Eagles put up a brave fight before going down 2-0. They fell to second-half goals from Guinean-born French midfielder Paul Pogba and an injury-time own goal by Nigerian captain Joseph Yobo. In a post-match interview in Brasilia, Yobo declared that he's retiring from international football to make way for a new generation of talented Nigerian players. At 33 years of age and with 100 appearances for the Super Eagles, Yobo is the most capped Nigerian international. Goalkeeper Vincent Enyema is second with 94 caps. Addressing the same media conference, Super Eagles coach Stephen Keshi expressed disappointment at the officiating of the American referee Mark Geiger. He says Geiger failed to penalize the French for several serious infringements during the match. Keshi says he is stepping down as Nigeria's Super Eagles coach. Elsewhere in Porto Alegre, Algerian Desert Fox and Germany were deadlocked at the end of regular time as neither side found the back of the net. Germany opened the scoring in this extra time through forward Andres Schuller and attacking midfielder Mesut Ozil before substitute striker Abdelmoumene Djabou pulled one back for the Algerians. Germany eventually prevailed 2-1. Algeria received a consolation when their goalkeeper Riaz Mbohli was voted man of the match in recognition of many dramatic saves he pulled off. Finally, two more places in the quarterfinals are up for grabs on the last day of round of 16 matches today, Tuesday. Argentina plays Switzerland in Sao Paulo, then Belgium encounter the United States of America in Salvador. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Tuesday morning comes from Aliu Sano of Juba, South Sudan. He writes, "Dear VOA, being an African and a football fan, I sometimes wonder about Africa's representation at the FIFA World Cup. The continent is represented by 5 countries out of 54 countries. On the contrary, South America is represented by 6 countries out of 9, while Europe is represented by 14 countries out of 30. With such a huge disparity, I wonder if Africa will ever win the FIFA World Cup. We thank you, Aliu Sano of Juba, South Sudan, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In South Africa, a report released Monday from a court order mental health evaluation says Oscar Pistorius did not suffer from a mental illness or defect at the time he shot and killed girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp last year. The report also concludes the Olympic athlete can be held criminally responsible for shooting Steenkamp through a closed bathroom door last year. In court on Monday, a witness for the defense described Pistorius as fearful of his surroundings without the use of his prosthetic legs. The Nigerian government has condemned the weekend violence in the northern part of the country. Suspected Islamist militants killed more than 50 people Sunday in Borno State. Community leaders say gunmen on motorcycles attacked churches. The villagers said after the attacks were reported, the military response was slow. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Monday that horrific attacks by Boko Haram are becoming an almost daily occurrence in northeastern Nigeria. In a statement Monday, he condemned the continuing violence and conveyed his solidarity and sympathy to the people of Nigeria. The Italian Navy has found the bodies of 30 migrants in the hold of a smuggler's boat. They were thought to have suffocated or drowned during the crossing. The vessel was carrying about 600 migrants. Italy's Navy on Monday brought the survivors to Pozzallo on the southern tip of Sicily. The Navy said it has rescued more than 5,000 would-be immigrants in the last 2 days. Well, that's it for this Tuesday, July 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vunganyi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradock, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa, but please stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.